I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Heredity Podcast with me, Dr. James Bergen. For the overwhelming majority of mammals, their biological sex is determined by a pair of sex chromosomes. Two X's and you have a female. An X and a Y and you have a male. Exceptions apply, but for the most part, this system has persisted for over 160 million years. But why? Sex chromosome turnover is common in other animal groups, so why the stability in mammals? Well, that's the question we're exploring in today's episode, as we hear from the authors behind the recent Heredity paper, Fragile, Unfaithful, and Persistent Wise, on how meiosis can shape sex chromosome evolution. Welcome to the Heredity Podcast. Can you please both introduce yourselves?
My name's Paul Waters. I'm an associate professor at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. My primary interest is sex chromosome evolution, but more broadly also sex chromosome biology.
And my name is Aurora Ruiz Herrera. I'm associate professor in Autonomous University in Barcelona, Spain. And our research is focused on how genomes are organized, evolved, and transmitted to the offspring. And for today's discussion, we will talk about sex chromosome evolution and meiosis.
Perfect. Well, thank you both for joining me. And yeah, like you say there, we're going to talk about sex chromosome evolution. And I guess the first question is, what is your paper generally on?
In this paper, we show how the particularities of the meiotic program have shaped or have influenced the evolution of sex chromosomes. So we wanted to bring together different disciplines, meiosis, sex, chromosome, and evolution. And this is because it's a fundamental question for biology. You know, all reproducing organisms produce germ cells, oocytes, and sperm. And each germ cell carries just one copy of the genetic material, one copy of homologous chromosomes. So this process is called meiosis. It's really conserved in different taxa and is highly regulated because at the end of the day, you need to have a healthy sperm and healthy oocyte. So we have different levels of regulation of this process. One of the level of regulation is that homologous chromosome needs to pair between them, interchange material, so they have, at the end of the day, increased genetic variability within populations and also avoid missegregation of chromosomes, so you don't have extra or less chromosomes at the end of the day. And another level of regulation is that sex chromosome need to be silencing, so genes on sex chromosome need to be turned off because it's essential for the process as well. Because if this silencing does not go properly, meiosis does not progress, and then germ cells so either are reproduced or they are not produced at all. So this is important. So in this context, sex chromosomes are really, really important because they are particular and different from autosomes. They not have homology in its full length, and they only share, at least in Eutherian, like humans, rodents, and cats, they only share a small region of the chromosome, which is called set autosomal regions. So that's why we think it's important to bring together how the sex chromosomes are organized and how they behave during meiosis. And also there's different sex chromosome morphology in nature, and that's why this is also important to understand.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I would never pretend to be an expert in meiosis. So I'm sort of coming from this, from the sex chromosome evolution side of things. We see in non-mammalian clades of vertebrates, so you know, reptiles and things like this, that there are lots of different sex chromosome systems that have been turned over. Even closely related species can have different autosomes that have become sex chromosomes. And in mammals, specifically therian mammals, which are marsupials and the placental mammals, so us, we see the same sex chromosome system has persisted for, 160 odd million years or something like that. And the question is why? And we've never really put together the mechanisms of meiosis together with sex chromosome evolution as a field to try and understand how meiosis might actually influence sex chromosomes. And it turns out that there are genes on the Y chromosome that are critical to meiosis and the meiotic checkpoints that Aurora was sort of alluding to, and that these things are quite selfish elements that are required to initiate meiotic sex chromosome silencing, and then they're required to be silenced by that exact same process. So if they're not there, meiosis fails and you don't get a viable gamete. And without a viable gamete with a Y chromosome, you can never lose the Y chromosome, essentially.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. And I think you kind of touched upon it a couple of times, but one of the really interesting things at the start of this paper is you talk about the fact that sex chromosomes show a different form of inheritance than Mendelian inheritance, which I guess a lot of people listening might be familiar with. So what exactly do you mean by this? How is their inheritance different?
Yeah, the fact that these laws of heredity, that the main ones are three, you know, that you have independent ensemblement, that is genes of different traits are independently inherited one another. And the second is that for two set of genes, the dominance is the one that are expressed in the first generation. And the third law, if you want to say that, is segregation, no? That is germ cell receives just one of the copies. But these are the main laws, and there's many sections to these three laws of heredity, and one of them are sex-linked inheritance. And this is because at least the species because sex chromosome can be as we said, different morphologies in nature. And it's one of the key points. So the ones that we have, for example, in humans is heteromorphic sex chromosomes. The X and the Y are very different. And maybe we can talk about that later, about the origin of sex chromosomes, right? But now, at least the ones that we have in humans and eutherians are very different between them. And that means they have a different set of genes in there, covering different set of genes that are necessary for sex determination and other features. So that means that assortment in genes that are in sex chromosomes are different from the autosomes. So in that sense, sex chromosome behaves different. They behave differently from autosomes in terms of segregation and in terms of gene inheritance, in general terms, right? So that was the idea. So touching this law of Mendelian inheritance, how sex chromosomes are different.
Fascinating. And I guess you kind of just mentioned it there as well on the origin of the sex chromosomes, because you also kind of discussed this and where they come from, the evolutionary mechanisms that gave rise to them and why they might persist. So why do we think sex chromosomes evolved?
Why is a big question.
Why or how?
So, yeah, I think we know a little bit more about how, because you know, you can determine sex genetically with sex chromosome systems, or you can determine it with an environmental cue, temperature being the most obvious one. So what we do know is that the X and the Y, and I'm going to be talking just about the therian X and Y, so marsupial and eutherian or placentals. So an ordinary pair of autosomes gained a sex-determining locus, and in this case it was a testis-determining allele on what became the proto-Y chromosome. So then you have essentially proto-X and a proto-Y, so one of them is going to become the X and one of them is going to become the Y. There's still recombination occurring along the length of that chromosome, like it would when it was an autosome. And then you have accumulation of alleles around that testis-determining locus on the proto-Y chromosome that are beneficial to males, so things that might be involved in spermatogenesis or something else that you might perceive as male beneficial. And they're physically close to that testis-determining locus. So they're in linkage disequilibrium, which means that they're more likely to be inherited in males than they are in females, which makes sense because they're male beneficial genes. And ultimately, you get suppression of recombination across this region. How that happens is hotly debated at the moment, but it ultimately did happen. That generates the first male-specific region of the Y chromosome. And once you have suppression of recombination, then all sorts of things can happen to that new male-specific region, because you no longer have selection acting at a single locus. You have selection acting across that new block of male-specific region. And that means that in that region, you could have a bad mutation, but if it's on the same Y chromosome as a really good mutation, that bad mutation will be dragged to fixation in the population. That can happen in reverse too. Good mutations coupled with bad mutations can result in those good mutations not getting to fixation. As recombination is suppressed further along the length of the Y chromosome, this phenomenon happening across the whole Y chromosome, and that ultimately results in loss of gene function from the Y chromosome and its degradation. And its degradation over 150 odd million years has led to the Wimpy Y hypothesis, which just sort of states that it's a degraded relic of the X chromosome. And being a degraded relic or a wimp, why has it persisted? And that's what we're trying to answer here in this particular paper.
Mm, fantastic. That's a very fun name for a very serious thing.
Yes.
I think that's a really good point that you're kind of getting onto there, because I guess the real crux of your paper is on the persistence of this Y chromosome. And it's where you have some of your most interesting discussions and some of the most interesting arguments. So what are the sort of key points that you want to pull out for why this Y chromosome has persisted?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's this degradation that Paul was talking about. No, many authors have said, well, if we keep this going many, many generations, eventually you will lose the Y. And this is not the case in many of the species that we see in nature, although there is exceptions, obviously. But one of the main ideas here is that the thing that the Y is still persistent is related to the meiotic program. As I said, no, in males, during a specific window of meiosis, you need to have the sex chromosomes inactive, right? Because they have different set of genes and they need to be inactivated to allow the process. So within the Y, there's one chromosome or a set of chromosomes called executioner genes that then need to be turned off during this meiotic window. Because if they get on, meiosis does not progress. They kill the cells and we don't have germ cells. So these genes in the Y, they need to be suppressed. Yeah, so what we see that most of the species, they have retained the Y, although this process of degeneration, eventually you will think they will be lost, but this is not the case. And what we think that this is persistence of the Y in different species is related to the meiotic program, actually, because as I said, one of the levels of regulation of the meiotic program is to have sex chromosome silencing during, at least in spermatogenesis, in the male germline, because there's really different set of genes, so they need to be silenced within this process. So the Y chromosome has evolved to bear genes that are need to be silenced during this process, and they are called executioner genes. Because if these genes are translocated to an autosome that are expressed, ill-expressed during meiosis is bad for the cells. So the meiotic program stops and you don't produce germ cells, you don't produce sperm. So you need to these genes to be silenced during this specific window. And that we think has imposed really a strong constraints to these genes to be in the Y and not in other chromosomes. So the Y needs to be there with these genes to meiosis to progress. So that's why we think the Y chromosome is persistent, because it has really, really these important genes in there, right? And the only way that these genes can be translocated is in the X chromosome, because the X is also silencing during the male meiotic program. So you can only be in the Y and the X, not in the autosomes. So that's why we think the persistence is there. So in many ways, obviously, these genes has been really well characterized in mouse, but we don't know many things about other species. And that's something that we want to bring into light, so a way to understand more what these genes are doing and where are they positioned and their behavior in other species, mouse or rodents, for example. I don't know if you, Paul, want to add something more about that?
Yeah, I think the main point is that essentially these genes, they initiate the silencing, then they have to be silenced by the silencing that they induce, so they act as their own sensor. You know, the Y chromosome has been considered selfish in the past in that it gains functions that are beneficial to males. So, as I said before, things like spermatogenesis functions. And that's the reason that it persists, because it has those functions. But I think the selfishness is for a different reason. It's that these things have a place to evolve and they've evolved there. And that's why the Y chromosome persists. It's a different kind of selfishness.
When we also see other species that they have lost the Y, but probably they have another system to retain again the function and start over again.
Yes, and those species that have lost their Y chromosomes in mammals, so these are mole voles and spiny rats, those executioner genes have been translocated into the X chromosome, where they can still initiate that silencing, and they do initiate that meiotic silencing, so they pass that meiotic checkpoint, and they're not expressed. So that's the only place they can go from the Y chromosome is to the X.
Mm, Fascinating. I think a lot of people will be surprised to even hear that there are mammals that have lost sex chromosomes. And I guess it's some really interesting ideas about the persistence of the Y chromosome in this paper. But I wonder what you both feel is the sort of key message that you're hoping people are going to take away from this paper.
I was just going to say something quite simple, is that mammals are probably exceptions with invertebrates. Maybe birds, but we don't know enough about them. Because in other vertebrates, sex chromosomes seem to get turned over quite a lot, whereas mammals are the exception. Like, we're the weirdos, probably.
Yeah, because something that we just focus on eutherians mainly in heteromorphic sex chromosomes, but there are many, many exceptions, and there is a huge diversity out there that still remain to be discovered. So we wanted to just bring two main points here. The meiotic program, which is essential and is really conserving taxa, how important it is to, or in the light of sex chromosome evolution, right? So why chromosome evolution is really dynamic, although in eutherians, are really stable to few exceptions, but it's many morphologies and processes in other taxa that remain to be discovered, probably. And also that this is also very linked to the meiotic program, which is essential for the sex reproductive species, actually. And I think we believe there is still much work to do now in describing new sex chromosome systems and new meiotic program that can allow influence the dynamic of the process, right? So we wanted to bring together, which is mainly now about genetic field in terms of sex-determined genes, the chromosome evolution, and also cell biology, the meiotic program. Also, I think combining different fields will give us probably answers to really complex questions, actually.
Yeah, and all sorts of new insight.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, very interesting paper. It's a very unique paper, although a lot of the elements of it, I think, will be familiar to a lot of people reading it, because, as you say, it does touch upon a lot of different fields and just kind of brings these ideas together in a really nice way. And I really hope that people are going to go and read it and really have a think about sex evolution. And just to finish up, I wonder if you could remind us what your paper is called.
Yeah, the paper is called Fragile, Unfaithful, and Persistent Wise, How Meiosis Can Shape Sex Chromosome Evolution. And I just invite all people just to read it. And just, even though, as you said, James, there are different fields, concepts that were already there, just bringing them together and try to have new ideas on how biology works in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely one of the most interesting papers I've seen come into Heredity in a while. And we have a lot of interesting papers, so I really hope people will go and give it a read. And thank you very much, both of you, for joining me and sharing these ideas with us.
Thank you to you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Arara and Paul. You can find their paper on the Heredity website. That's nature.com/HDY. While you're there, you can also check out how to submit your own papers to the journal. Heredity is the official journal of the Genetic Society. You can subscribe to the Heredity podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you can follow us on Twitter. That's @HeredityJournal. If you want to get in touch with me directly, drop me an email at hereditypodcast.gen@gmail.com. I'm James Bergen. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.